Hey, cycling fans. Thanks again for joining us. This is episode 22. In the actual episode, you'll be hearing reference to episode 21. But since the recording of this episode and the actual production, we were able to go out to the Tour California host city announcement, and we were able to slot in a little special edition interview. Check that out. I think it's well worth your time, and it's a short one, so it's easy. What we got here is Nate Dunn's going to start us off with talking about carbs and riding, and basically a perfect segue for this time of year and in the coach's tip. Then stay tuned for the rest of the rambling podcast that we have going on in a weekly, bi-weekly, somewhat weekly basis. As always, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbeam, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, Overcast.fm, and also look for us, like us, follow us on Facebook at Between Two Wheels. That's between the number two and wheels on Facebook. Once again, Nate Dunn.
Hi, this is Nate Dunn from Data Driven Athlete with a quick coaching tip. One of the best ways to maintain leanness throughout a season or while entering an off-season period is to follow the principle of carbohydrate periodization. Carbohydrate periodization is really just a fancy way of saying that you should match your carbohydrate intake to the intensity and the duration of your riding. And effectively, what this does over the long term is ensures that you're able to properly fuel your workouts to ride and train with quality while not gaining excess weight on days that you ride less. And if you have any questions about carbohydrate periodization or some other strategies to get lean, you can check out a post over at our website titled Three Strategies to Get Lean and Stay Lean. If you have any other questions about this topic, you can shoot me an email at nate@datadrivenathlete, and I would love to follow up with you. Thanks.
Welcome, episode 21 of the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is your host, Tyler Yonke, and joined today with Chris Flower. Chris, I should do a proper introduction. You are the DDA president, is that correct? Board member president?
Yes, that is correct. I think in title only. I'd say we're a functional team where everybody has a leadership role.
So I'm on the board as well. I think my role is technically secretary, which works well.
Nice.
For the Harvey Weinsteins of this world. But what Kurt as well. Do you know what Kurt's role is?
Court jester and interim vice president.
He just toppled me quite nicely there.
I just gave him that title.
What does a club, just thinking about this, what does the club president do? I mean, what are your duties?
So the primary tasks that I kind of given myself is making sure.
Wait, did you say giving yourself?
Yeah, I can self-delegate. I think it's allowed. The biggest thing is just making sure that A, we're registered through USAC, and B, registered through NCNCA, so that we're a legitimate team for the rest of the riders. And then just try and keep things moving forward, keep everybody informed on any board decisions. So if we're looking to target a stage race mid-year, try and get people on board as early as possible. And outside of that, it's kind of a free-flowing team, and all ideas are welcome, and everybody's got an opportunity to kind of voice their thoughts.
Yeah, as far as our structure goes, correct. I was just curious to kind of what your duties were as far as to USA Cycling. I remember years ago, and I think even just when we had started the team, every team was required to put on a race or at least be involved in that. I don't think that's part of the case.
Yeah, and I think there's been some, I don't want to say issues related to that, but it seems like there's fewer teams, obviously, that are putting on races. So does that then lead to fewer races, or does it create a vacuum that promoters are able to step into and create races? I don't know. But outside of that, it's a simple thing online. Register your team through USAC, register your team through NCNCA. You're good to go.
Good to go. Yeah. Back to the race thing. So I think it's a double edge for me. I mean, I'm not a big fan of necessarily spending the whole weekend out there helping to put it, because it's a lot of work, and you know those teams that do it, you know, God bless them. However, with that in mind, it is also nice to I think it does something with forcing teams into that role of, if you're going to have a team, you're going to be putting on a race, and then every team tries to maybe do a little bit more than, you know, there's a lot of complaints about some of the lackluster races that are kind of just
sure, you know. Yeah, and I think it also, you know, our team used to collaborate with another team to kind of help them out with their race. And I think that satisfied our need to be involved in a race. And yeah, it definitely leads teams, all teams, to be more involved in the race scene as opposed to just occasionally participating in a race or something.
I wonder though if that has anything to do with kind of the, you know, teams losing money. And so are you forcing a team to be involved in a race situation, putting on a race and that whole aspect when they, maybe they can't even afford. And so then you're maybe driving them to a, not a bankrupt situation, but a situation where they can't sustain their own membership. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. And I think a lot of the smaller teams that they've been able to do is kind of tag team with a promoter. So I know some of the Bay Area teams have worked with Red Kite and have been the volunteer team, so they do kind of check that box so that they've been affiliated with a race, but at the same time they're not having to do all of the legwork or absorb all of the cost.
Yeah. All right, so you know, if anybody wants to learn more about USA Cycling or the Northern California Nevada Cycling Association, they can go to the USA Cycling website or ncnca.org, I think is ours, not to get that confused with some of the other acronym websites Kurt maybe visited. Okay, let's jump into some of the exciting news stuff and race report things. We keep talking about drug testing, and this young gentleman, Michael Bardiani, CSF, got popped for a diuretic this last week. 22 years old. That team had two previous positives. I think it was right before the Giro. And so they're in jeopardy of like losing a long-term, like out of a long-term ban.
Yeah, I think that they're subject to a license suspension.
Yeah. Which and this guy, you brought this one to my attention. You want to take it from here about his excuses and what you think of them?
Yeah, I just kind of glanced through the article. I didn't read it in depth, but his argument is basically, you know, he was at home having dinner with his mom, and she takes the medication. While she was serving him food, she must have spilled some remnants of that medication onto his plate that he then ate, which led to his positive test. And
do you buy that?
That's a pretty big stretch. I don't think that's a valid argument. It'd be difficult, I think, to prove that in any capacity. So
I mean, the proof, I think what's most detrimental on that whole situation is he's a 22-year-old living at home with his mom making him dinner. That to me was almost more egregious than the the drug test himself.
Is that you know, that it's a struggling lifestyle to be what are they, Pro Conti team?
Yeah, they're Pro Conti.
Pro Conti guy, yeah. He's got to save a few bucks. He can't handle an apartment on his own.
Without getting into a whole issue of, I think Italians are prone to that, right? That living at home, then bring mom and dad in later. I remember reading something years ago with Mario Cipollini. You know, he's a big flamboyant guy, wife, and his parents lived with him in the house. Mm. You know, he had a lot of money at the time. Yeah. Maybe get a guest house. I don't know.
Could be. You never get too detached from that, your mom's cooked dinner, you know?
Yeah, I guess. You know, family, that's not so bad.
But yeah, that's definitely, I imagine there's got to be a pretty hefty penalty for the rider and the team. I haven't seen what the ultimate outcome of that is, but it can't be that great.
Three positives in a year. I remember when Astana, you know, they had like a, I don't want to say a minor league team, but they had their other team that got...
Was that Vino Forever?
Was it?
I think it might have been.
I just caught what that is. Vinokurov? Is that?
Yeah, because he was the president, I believe. Oh, okay. Or he had a leadership role, and that was the name of their minor league team.
2 years ago or so, and they had a bunch of guys getting positives, and so there was a whole thing about possibly their team being having the license, but then since they were, it was like their minor league team, so to speak, that we didn't actually attribute up to them.
Was that what triggered Cookson's Last Chance Saloon statement, or was that directly related to Astana?
I don't remember that statement.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Bring it.
It must have been 1-2 years ago, and Astana, whether it was Astana.
He went Western on us.
Okay. I'd be curious to hear it live with the accent. I don't know how well it would flow. But yeah, he said Astana's drinking, or they're in the Last Chance Saloon, and I think one more violation and they're out of here. But I don't think anything really ever became of it.
No, yeah, I guess they went clean or supposedly. You know, speaking of the president, so you have Cookson, that is. So the new president came in, and what's his name? I'm trying to remember, the Lapointier or something. I don't know, some French guy. Okay,
yeah,
there you go.
Not sure. That's a guess.
And I heard an interview with him today, so he definitely can speak English, because I thought maybe this was a translation issue. And he was talking about, let me see if I can find here. So I remember, technology, and he wants to reduce race radios.
Right.
And people are like, okay, back to this argument. But his reason was he was afraid of online gambling. And then he made the comment that he was concerned that during the race, a rider would then be contacted, someone would lay a bet during the race and would be contacted and be instructed to do something different during the race. Now, my thinking is maybe he didn't understand the radios, because I don't think it's anybody could just beam into Shroom and you get
they're
the right frequency.
Phones.
Yeah, they're not cell phones. And this already has the ability to talk to a rider right now, but it would have to be from the manager. So the manager would have to be involved in the betting scheme as well. Right.
Yeah.
So you've got multiple layers here. And there's so many other problems with cycling that this seems to me. Okay, radios, you want to talk about that. That's perfectly fine. But now you're going down this rabbit hole.
Right.
That seems just, I don't know.
I'd be curious if he has anything beyond just suspicion that there's this extensive gambling circuit that's negatively affecting cycling. Or is it just paranoia? Is it, I don't know. It just, and if you're the rider and you get a phone call or whatever, you get contact on the radio that says, hey, take a dive. I mean, why not just say no? Or just, they say, go attack and help your teammate win. You should be doing that already. I don't really see.
I think of cycling as one sport that's more difficult to control with betting, unless he's really talking about the Olympics a few years ago, or was it Liège-Bastogne-Liège with Vinokourov, and I'm trying to remember the other rider, where, you know, buying off the win.
Right.
Hey, you're making a deal between these two guys.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe. But cycling is, it's not, you know, you have a goalie that's taking a dive, or you have a pitcher or a catcher,
right,
or, you know, someone at the Black Sox of old, right? Throwing,
yeah,
some games like that. Because you have to have the whole team involved. So I think it's just more difficult in cycling. Just because it's always so hard to win in general.
You know, you're not literally going to crash out the field. That's not going to happen.
Well, that would
if you do, that would be terrible.
Yeah.
It just seems like of all the things he could tackle in his early days in office, it's an odd one.
It is, yeah. So have you heard of any other items that he's going after right now?
I think just off the top of my head, I know he's focused on trying to reduce, was it tramadol? He's interested in reducing the use of tramadol.
Do you know what the benefits or non-benefits or what tramadol really works for?
I don't know enough about it, unfortunately. And I know he recently had a comment about, the women's lacrosse? Getting reduced to one day. I think he kind of took a stand saying that it's one day is not sufficient for a race of that caliber. So he's definitely looking to probably be more supportive of women's racing.
I got a suggestion for him, what he can do. And I've come back to this Tour de France issue with women several times, because I just don't think that's not the key to the women's success. And I heard, I'm trying to remember her name, Sophie something. She was on a cycling podcast in Australia, and her comments were that there's oftentimes she does coverage for the men, and she does some for the women as well. But you have a race like, I think, the Giro at the same time that the Tour was going this year. And she's like, you're not going to be sent over. The Tour is what you're going to cover. So why do you have a big women's race at the same time that you're having the big men's race?
Right.
It doesn't work for that. So, I mean, there's maybe he can clear up the calendar a little bit and have some. I always want standalone races. I mean, like I said before, you know, piggybacking doesn't seem to be the result for that. So
it makes sense. So instead of having co-races going on at the same time, where the coverage of the kind of tag along women's race is not going to get as much press.
Oh, yeah, of course. Exactly. And you know, one other thing that was brought into this was they just had a whole thing about women's. The minimum wage for women's cycling, and there's none set, right?
Right.
And they're like, oh, what's the deal with that? How discriminatory? But then some of the managers are saying, he goes, no. If you were to impose that, we wouldn't be a team, because we can't actually make the budgets.
Right.
Okay. So if they're not able to make the budgets for that, do you think they're able to make the budgets for 3-week race in Europe someplace? I mean, some said they were struggling to make a 3-day race out of it last year, which was only, 2 days, but, they raced and they had multiple days in between, and then another. Some women weren't showing up with enough tires. They didn't have the accommodations. And yet the ones that are maybe Sunweb, who's associated kind of with the men's team, they were able to more acclimate to that and be successful at it. So I think you need to get the funding in there and drive those up, and maybe you do that with their own separate events.
Yeah, and you know, if you have other teams that are on the men's side that are pro Conti level that are struggling to make the bigger stage races due to equipment transportation costs, yeah, or the addition of the mechanics because you're having to redo bikes day after day after day, I can't imagine that the women's team are able to keep up either.
Yeah, and I think I talked to this with Andrew when we were on the podcast, that I enjoy the women's racing, especially the shorter stages. It seems to be a little bit more dynamic, and it's good to see. But it's also, I just want them to be successful on their own, so that if there's, you know, you don't have the drug problems as much, it seems like, in the women's as you do the men. And maybe the men's falls completely. Do you want them to be drug along with that?
Sure.
Drugged.
I think that, you know, in a counterpoint to, you know, races not doing well if they're going on at the same time, I think the Amgen California race did a good job last year of having the women's 4-day stage race kind of be a lead in to the men's stage race. So they kind of did separate routes, separate days, but I think the women ended in Sacramento near the starting time of the men. So it seemed to work pretty well in that regard.
I will actually say that there was, you look back at that race, and I took an interest to it after the fact. And so I was kind of catching back up, and I actually found a little bit more interest. Well, I found a lot of interest in that race, especially the stage out in Tahoe.
Yeah.
Or Lake Tahoe. It was pretty good. And then the final one coming into the Capitol.
Sure.
Where there was a whole issue of the sprint spot and, you know, little, I guess she won by just a few seconds, overtook her with, there was some dirty deeds going on. I don't know if you saw that with the.
I didn't, no.
So there was a, the American, I believe, had a slight lead. She's fairly much newer to cycling than, I'm trying to remember the names and forgive me for that. But they had a bonus sprint along the course. Mm. And so the girl that was in the lead, she wasn't going to be a sprinter. She was a climber. So they needed to protect that from the lady in second place.
Sure.
So her teammate was tagged to sit on her wheel and to go for it.
Yeah.
And as they're coming up to the sprint line, it's like the South River Ride type of area, okay, somewhere out there. She gets kind of ridden off the road, literally off the road. And she's like, you know, foot out, right, sliding in the dirt. And
Guttered without a gutter.
Yeah. And she was saying that it was, you know, this other big team was, you know, being, you know, some nefarious activities along the way. So it was pretty
unnecessarily aggressive racing.
Yeah, I guess. Speaking of aggressive racing, there was this horrible story in France. I believe it was a continental team because I hadn't heard much about it. It's a Shell Pacific. And this 20-year-old rider, Matthew, he was helping his team leader back to the pack after on a descent of the Col de la Pirogue. I don't know if that said that right, but he ended up smashing into an ambulance,
right,
and dying. And let me just read kind of the news report here. So reports in the French press have said that Ribal, I guess that's Matthew Ribal, hit the windscreen of an ambulance that was coming in the other direction. I mean, you have an ambulance. I guess hopefully it was going for some medical reason, not just like cruising out there. I don't know. Traffic was reportedly delayed, but not completely blocked from the road on which the race was taking place. According to AFP and L'Equipe, Gerard Saloon, president of the Regional Cycling Committee of New Caledonia, said that Rival had taken a corner at around 80K KPH, and as he tried to bring Brentridge back, his teammate. That's horrible.
Yeah, it's definitely terrible. And kind of the setting that I can imagine this being is there may have been the rolling enclosure. You know, they had mechanical, so they're outside of the rolling enclosure. Rolling enclosure is so far ahead that they've reopened traffic, and maybe the riders weren't aware of that, and so they're probably bombing down a hill to get back on to the back of the group, not realizing that there's going to be traffic coming up the other way. Because from what I read, the ambulance that they collided with wasn't associated with the race. It was just happened to be driving in the opposite direction.
Was it reacting to a medical issue?
I don't think so. I think it was just traffic.
It just happens to be an ambulance.
Right. It's just not the unfortunate consequence there.
Which is, yeah.
I'm thinking about races we've done around here where, you know, Cascade as an example, where we have a rolling enclosure. Once you fall out of the back of that, you're just kind of, you're exposed. And I suspect that's probably what happened here is, you know, you're going around a corner, not thinking that the road's going to be open to traffic. And unfortunately it was.
You just really want to talk about the time you're at got off the back at Cascade.
I'd rather not relive that at all.
By the way,
I just know what it's like to be outside of the caravan.
Heroic day for you that day. Yeah, no, that's you know, you don't like to see any of those things. Tour de France. They just had the route announcement for the tour, and to me, I looked at it briefly. I didn't get a deep dive. I've heard some commentary about it, but it kind of reminded me of that 3T aqua bike that we were talking about earlier.
Where sure.
It's the hipster. It's got everything that you'd ever want.
Right.
Cobbles, team time trial. Gravel, hilly TT,
right,
Alp d'Huez.
As long as it's short stages, I think we've checked all the boxes.
Yeah. So my it looks like they have a full on, not just some cobbles, but the full on like Paris-Roubaix day.
Yeah. And I saw there's 15 of the cobbled sections they're going to include in.
Do they actually finish in at Paris-Roubaix, or is it just part of that route?
I've only seen a couple of the maps of it, and I can't tell if they actually finish in the velodrome or not. It's finishing in the town of Roubaix. I think it'd be really difficult to have a tour stage finish on the velodrome because there's just so many bad things that could happen. The spacing of the groups will just be so much more significant, and I think there's an increased likelihood of collisions that could happen there.
Well, if it splits up like a Paris-Roubaix day, then I don't think it's much of an issue. I mean, that's why they could do it in the velodrome.
That's true. I think it would be great.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool. I like that kind of the TT in the tour last year with a stage 20 that finished in that big stadium.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a cool idea.
Just something different.
Yeah. I wonder if you're going to see any of the GC riders take part in some of the like let's say Froome. Is he going to take part in some of these early season classics just to get some cobble riding in?
I don't know. I would think he'd be more inclined to maybe use some of the route and just get comfortable. I assume, you know, he's a well-accomplished rider. He's probably comfortable riding on cobbles. But it just seems like it would be counter to, you know, his racing plan or his training plan, and it would introduce an unnecessary risk. Because, I mean, a lot of those cobbled classics, they're full of crashes.
Yeah.
It's like, well, do you really want to get that comfortable and used to the cobbles at the risk of crashing? And I mean, he seems to be pretty fragile based on how often he breaks things.
Well, true. He does seem to be pretty well adept at kind of making changes. You know, a few years ago, he's not a good descender, and Now we've seen where he kind of is taking that one on pretty heavily. I mean, he takes about the bull by the horn, so to speak, on the descents. He's obviously done some work there, so. Yeah, I don't know that he needs to necessarily do the classics, but it would be, you know, a few years ago, he crashed on the cobble stage,
right?
I think before they hit the cobbles.
Yeah, it was before the cobbles, and I think he crashed the week or the day stage or so. Before
yeah,
or something.
Yeah,
so he was already injured. Pretty banged up, and I think he withdrew in that stage too, right?
Yeah, he did not hit the cobbles. And I think we saw Nibali. Was that the year Nibali won? And he kind of made his mark that day. I mean, he's a crafty rider on many different types of terrain.
Yeah, he did really well that day. I think he put a lot of time into Contador and obviously Froome because Froome withdrew. But Lars Boom did a really good job winning that stage.
Right,
and I think there's talks of him being brought back to race the tour because they have that cobbled stage. And it'd be a good opportunity for him to kind of show off his skill set.
I actually remember TJ doing fairly well that day, but I mean, it was the first,
Go figure.
But then, you know, that was the first week of the tour, so
right.
He hadn't really hit his stride of blowing it up yet. So they also have some gravel. I looked at that, I think it's stage 10. Team time trial back in the mix. I think it's short.
Yeah.
But
it's like 30K?
I think so. So
stage 2, stage 3? It's early, I know that.
Yeah, and they don't have a prologue. And they moved the tour back a whole week to accommodate this soccer football thing. Have you heard of World Cup?
No, I'm not familiar with
it. I'm not either.
Is that coming up?
They say it's big in Europe.
Oh.
Yeah. Go figure. Not my gig. Anyway, they have gravel on one of these roads. Stage 10. It's got quite a bit of climbing. It looks like a really heavy climbing race. In general, not just that stage. They do Alpe d'Huez again, the traditional direction, which is good. They do some more stuff in that. So they hit the up in Brittany in the top kind of northwest of the country. Then they fly all the way over and they hit the Pyrenees.
Right.
I mean, sorry, the Alps, the southeast.
Yeah.
And then they transfer over to the Pyrenees. And then the last day is like from the very bottom left, if you look at the map, up to the top right, up to Paris. And I bet you're going to see a lot of press not actually make that trip up, because that's about the biggest traverse you can do. I mean, the riders are flying, obviously.
Yeah. So no, I mean, that's deal. A big transfer day.
Yeah.
For the last and second to last stages. I mean, they're having to travel halfway across the country.
Yeah. Seems like they just tend to tail whip a lot of these press people. And I wonder if the shorter stages, and I need to look at this in more depth, but it seems like you have a lot of these shorter stages that the transfers then are going to be more dramatic. The more short stages you have, dramatic as far as distance wise, you're going to spend more time in the car.
It could be. I do like the move toward the shorter stages, just because I think it leads to more dynamic racing.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see if that translates across to the tour, like it's done in some of the American stage races, where they've tried to make the racing a little more explosive.
Yeah,
the tour may just be a little too controlled, though, just because it is what it is, and the bigger teams will shut everything down.
Well, you know, the Vuelta is really gone after that, right? I mean, they seem to be doing that more. And then I've heard the critique for the tour is you really, to make these, and we had one last year, which was really good. A short stage that, sure, you know, Contador took off from the gun, right?
Right.
And it was pretty explosive. But some people are saying that to make those really effective, they need to follow a big, long, hard day. So that,
okay.
And I don't know. I mean, but if you have a bunch of punchy, multiple short days, I mean, it could, at some time, it's, you can only go full throttle for so,
right,
so many days in a row, right? So that should be pretty cool. And we did talk about how the women are only having their one day. Now, they are doing, though, I believe, the stage 10. I'm trying to recall that, which has that gravel section.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that I know they're not doing like last day, you know, right, like on the Champs-Élysées. They're actually doing a climby day, which I think is good. That last year's climb was that, I'm trying to remember who won. And once again, sorry about the names here, but her Strava time was like right up there with the men.
Oh, wow.
Now, she had only done, you know, that climb. But come on, that's still,
it's impressive.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, I know that on the tour they have fewer sprinter stages, and the few flat stages that they do have are going to be in pretty heavy windy areas. So it'll be interesting to see how those bigger sprinter guys, you know, take advantage of what few opportunities they have. If it'll be a more aggressive finish with the lead out trains just really going toe to toe with each other, or what'll happen there.
I think it was Cavendish or someone had made the comment about, oh, you know, it's almost to the point where he wasn't going to do it.
Yeah.
And you know, there's going to be some, and I think Sagan might be his wheelhouse. If you have, you know, look at some of the stage profiles, like the early ones out in Brittany,
right,
they're just shark's teeth. I mean, it's really choppy.
Yeah.
So, you know, him and Matthews might come out with more wins.
Yeah. And Degenkolb as well. So there's some opportunity for the non just kind of powerhouse sprinters.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of good stuff on tap for that.
Yeah, it's always. And speaking of sprinters, we just had this new Chinese race, the Zhangji Tour. I'm not sure if I even say that.
Guanxi, perhaps?
Okay. Sure. That sounds like a much nicer dish.
That, yeah.
It is a World Tour race, which is kind of weird for me that they are virtually no TV coverage.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed to only be able to catch a few kind of GoPro-based highlight reels to kind of see what had happened, because it looks like it was a pretty interesting stage race. A lot of sprinter finishes, but still it looked like it was one worth watching.
Yeah, so we had Gaviria taking out, who, you know, you told me he's from Colombia.
Yes, he is.
I think is why I thought Argentina was, I don't know why.
But he took four stages of the six.
He took four of the six. It was kind of like the Tour of Turkey with, was it Trenton that was winning all those?
Yeah.
And so he got four of the six. Groenewegen actually took stage five, and it looked like it was a bike throw between the two of them.
Right, yeah.
So he could have taken.
I could edit that. He could have won.
I could edit that out. Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely, he was right there in the mix in that stage. And Groenewegen, I think that was the only stage I really saw him really contending for a sprint. And Gaviria definitely owned that. And I don't know if that's, because he's that much better than everybody else, or if the competition there was just a little flat. Another guy that I was expecting to see some decent results out of was Caleb Ewan, and I think he finished off the back in almost every single stage, several minutes. I mean, these are flat sprinter stages, and he's just nowhere in the mix. I don't know if that's burnout or if he just wasn't there to race, or what?
I think the logical conclusion there is, Chris, his career is over.
There could be that.
He's hit the end and he's done.
At the ripe age of 22, 21, whatever he is, 23?
Yeah. I think it's, look, you get these races. It's, well, look, who won the overall? Wellens.
Tim Wellens.
Good climber, because they had a climbing stage.
Right.
And, look, I'm just kind of, I did see the Velon GoPro one for that one.
Yeah.
But, at any of these, this time of year, you've got some, who's peaking for the Zhang Ji whatever tour? Right?
I would think anybody that's rolling off of Lombardia Fitness, perhaps.
But. Yeah. Well, there you go. Lombardia Fitness, which also we saw, just Nibali just went and did that Taiwanese KOM race.
Right.
With Guyman and Cam Piper.
Right, yeah.
And a few others that were, that looks like a horrendous, but I doubt Nibali is going there. It's funny because you see the... the most horrendous podium I've seen in a while is six deep, I think. You throw Phil Guyman on there. I think if he would have got 10th, they would have gone 10 deep, yeah, just to make sure that they get him on. And so Nibali wins that, and he wins it pretty convincingly, but I would imagine he just sat in, and then when he needed to go, he just went. Because
I would assume that that's the case.
I doubt that was the season goal.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if he was peaking for that. Lombardi was the big build-in for the Taiwanese.
So he's carrying that over. Challenge. Now, but someone like Gaviria, it's a good build for. He's staying with Quickstep next year. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So that's a good build for him. Get four wins in a row like that. The guy obviously has some talent. He was going well, going into the Worlds.
Right.
So.
No, he's definitely a phenomenal sprinter, but it'd be interesting to see how he kind of carries that form into next year. I'm sure his confidence is through the roof now, and he just feels like he could take anybody on. So with the performance at the Guanxi race, I think he's...
You always get that one right.
I think he's, ending the season on about as high a note as possible.
So the Wellens win, did you happen to see the motorbike?
So, yeah, I did catch that. Again, the coverage was pretty minimal. So all I saw was a 5-second clip of him rolling up the hill, two bike lengths off the back of a motorbike for the last... couple hundred meters, and it's like, well, how long had that been going on for? And did he just kind of free ride that all the way up, or what?
I caught something similar. They didn't show a GoPro from his bike,
sure,
to see how, if it was getting spittle off the wheel.
Right.
I don't know if it was a Chinese driver and he's of Chinese descent. You know how they always say you got an Italian in Italy, or it's usually the Spanish. They're Contador, right? He's taken off and he's basically rubbing front wheels with the motorbike.
Right.
So it did look a little suspect, although the who was behind him, he was just a little way. So I don't know if it was a crucial.
No, it was, I forget his name now. Rides for Trek, Segafredo.
Okay. We did our research.
GC fella.
Not Daniel Oss. No, he
no,
got,
no, no.
He got
he was with BMC.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Anyway, I can't remember his name. It's that relevant.
It is. Yeah, this time of year, we're talking about the tour of, what do you pronounce it?
How do you? Guanxi?
Guanxi.
I guess.
Guanxi. Speaking of, we're not speaking, this is not a good segue, but there's some good transfers. It just, so we found out Landa went to Movistar.
Right.
And I had mentioned when this first came about, there was rumor of it, I thought his whole concept and saying that the reason he was leaving Sky was a bunch of crap, because the team he was talking about going to was Movistar. And you've got definite leaders there, so
right,
you're
going
to fall into the same exact trap.
Yeah.
So if you didn't want to be with Sky, or there's a language barrier, and then that's fine. So it comes out this week that Quintana basically is saying, "Oh, I'm the leader."
Right.
So he looks like he's back into that role. What do you think you're going to see for the tour this year? I imagine you're going to see probably both of those guys.
I would think so. I would assume that the team would probably designate Quintana as the leader. He's just got a completely different racing style, though, where he's extremely patient and he just kind of sits on Froome's wheel and sits on Froome's wheel and loses time, and then tries to make a last ditch effort in one of the last few stages. That seems to be his MO, and it seems like Landa is a more dynamic racer and wants to go on the attack more often. So maybe it's a good opportunity for Movistar to just say, all right, Landa, go on the attack and make Sky chase you, and let Quintana get a free ride on that. I don't know. It seems like both guys are in a position where they could lead a team. They both seem to have the firepower to do that. And I don't know how well that'll mesh for Quintana.
So your description, you could have replaced the words Landa with Valverde.
Right.
I'm sorry, Alejandro Valverde. Yeah. And you would have basically described their setup the last several years. That's kind of what they've done.
Yeah.
Which seems to have worked. I mean, when I say worked, I mean they've got podiums. They haven't been winning necessarily with Froome. Let's just be honest. It's about beating Froome. It's not getting a podium in the or winning the Giro or the Vuelta.
About being competitive.
Yeah. So maybe he'll take that because I bet Valverde, I don't know if he's recovered from his knee crack.
Right.
And even if so, if he's going to be doing the Giro or something else, and now Landa's kind of that new block in the place, and we'll see how that works.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. Or do you just have Landa go after the Giro? I mean, he seems like he can bring home a win there.
He's done well at the Giro.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty exciting to see him with Astana a few years ago.
Yeah.
I bet he, especially doing fourth last year, he's not going to want to agree to that.
Yeah. It'll be tough.
Yeah.
Team dynamics.
Speaking of team dynamics, Aru goes to UAE. We had mentioned that a little bit before. I know you're pretty excited about that one.
Yeah.
But who on Astana is there now to take the mantle of the GC rider?
I don't know.
Vinokourov coming back?
I think he might. Yeah, he's going to come out of retirement.
So they have Fuglsang, Jacob
Fuglsang. Oh, yeah, he's decent, but I think he's more like a one-week guy. I don't know if they have anybody for a Grand Tour.
Now, did he wreck with Port in the Tour, or did he crash out at some point?
I don't know.
That was Dan Martin that went down.
Yeah.
But it seems like he had a crash, too. Now, he won the Dauphiné right before the Tour.
Yeah.
And that was their... Hey, we're going to have him as their. I just don't think he.
I think leading into that race, there was a lot of internal conflict about who's going to be the leader here. Is it going to be Aru or is it going to be Fuglsang? And yeah, I remember he either crashed out or he just had a horrible stage where he lost a ton of time and just kind of fell by the wayside.
Yeah, and it'll be so Aru to UAE. Who else is going there?
I'm not sure. I don't know much about that team and their staff.
Is that the one Dan Martin went to? Dan Martin went to one of those Arab Emirates. Well, there you go.
There you go.
Because he wouldn't have gone to Bardiani.
No.
So I think that's where he's at.
Okay.
Him and Rory Sutherland, I know, signed for the same team with a ton of money. Evidently, it was they just backed up one of these Sheik's trailers full of money and dumped it in his lap. So good for him.
He was going over there. If he's going to UAE, I think, in all the press releases I read from him.
Who, Dan Martin?
Yeah. And yeah, he did go to UAE for 2 years.
Okay.
He was saying he's going over there to be a team leader in a GC role for a Grand Tour. So it just seems like that's another potential conflict with Aru going there.
Aru just follows us around, right?
I guess so.
And now he's...
Yeah. It a lot of shakeups, I think, for GC roles this year.
Yeah, that'll be definitely an interesting one. Speaking of other shakeups, Nieve to Orica. So coming off of a hot tour he was at the Tour, right? With Froome.
Yeah.
He was a good support
guy. And I think that'll, that's another team that's starting to change their dynamic a little bit. Orica's going to much more of a Grand Tour GC focused team. They've got a similar situation where they've got three guys that can really lead a team between the two Yates brothers and Chavez, but they've got a pretty robust support team now with Nieve going there. So it'll be cool to see how that all shakes out next year. Maybe Sky losing some of these key guys won't be as strong and Froome will have a little bit of vulnerability and somebody might be able to take him on.
So who all did Sky lose? You got Nieve, Landa. And I don't know who else is coming in.
They picked up Castroviejo.
I think you're right. He's a good time trialist. I don't know what he does for the climbing stuff.
Not necessarily for the climbing stuff, but just in those longer, grueling stages, being able to protect a rider.
They only need eight this year.
That's
right?
True. Yeah. So,
speaking of which, I saw that BMC reduced their roster down to 24 for next year.
Right.
I only saw the headline. I didn't click on it to see what their roster was for last year. So I don't know if they
29.
Dropped 29.
So
okay.
They lost five.
So that sucks. That's, five people. Maybe they even lose support staff as a result.
Yeah. They did pick up Simon Gerrans, though. So
oh, they did.
A good addition, okay. Yeah. Even though they did lose a couple key guys like Daniel Oss left.
Yeah. But,
so some give and take.
Yeah. Back to Orica, they also picked up Trenton and Bauer.
Yeah.
So that team is that Trenton, I think, is a really good pickup. Well, first of all, the Nieve one for them is really good because now they can – I doubt they're going to take – first of all, it'll be interesting to see if those three guys actually have – the three guys being the two Yates and Chavez to see if they actually start to coalesce and come together fit at the same time. You know, Chavez had a weird year, right?
Yeah,
and
then
the
other two crash.
Yeah. And then if the other two, if they can all just kind of – what they're going to do. Now you have Nieve, who can, you know, you can essentially send one of those guys to one of these other races with Nieve as this massive support.
Right.
Or, I don't know, all four to the Tour?
I don't know if they do all four, but they probably have one of the Yates and Chavez go to the Tour, and then the other Yates do the Giro.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of how they've done it in the past, so.
Well, last year. And the year before, I guess, yeah. So, but bringing Trenton in, I think, would be really good for how you mentioned before, Caleb Ewing for his sprint train.
Right.
Because, you know, that team is kind of going away from that in a sense with all these GC guys. You know, they used to be like this kind of roll your time trial team in a sense.
Yeah.
And now they've kind of...
But they still have that component as well, which is cool. So they're definitely building like all-around capability.
Yeah.
Because they've got, with Trentin and Jack Bauer going there, they've got a strengthened classic squad. They did lose Jens Kukulari, who is a really good classics guy. He went to Lotto Soudal. But, you know, they've still got Matt Heyman, who does decently at Paris-Roubaix. They've got, Luke Durbridge, who's another guy who's kind of up and coming, will be a classics leader. And then you've got Bauer, who's just a big TT-type guy who will do well as a support person in Roubaix or similar. And then Trentin is a similar guy who has classics aspirations. So it's a good team.
Yeah, and Trentin has, as we saw in Turkey and the Vuelta, can win stages himself, sprint. But I think his real benefit there is, like you said, the classics. And I also think he's a good lead out, which would be good for Caleb. So that's pretty impressive to them. Peter Sagan, he's got some more support coming. What did you take of the fact that they signed up Oss and Kenick?
I think Oss is a really big sign. They used to ride together before on Liquid Gas, so they probably have some existing relationship. And Oss has been really a key support guy for Greg Van Avermaet, who just won Paris-Roubaix this year.
Similar rider to Sagan.
They're very much similar guys. So yeah, having Oss on board, I think, you know, his riding ability, his experience, and just, you know, his proven track record as a lead support guy, I think will be a huge pickup for Peter Sagan, who always seems to be, you know, coming into the end of those races alone. So now that he's got a couple really strong guys that can be there to help him out in the last 30K, I think it's going to change the outlook for him.
Yeah, that should be good. And Peter Kenick, I mean, he's kind of a Kwiatkowski type. I get the feeling.
Punchy rider. Yeah. So I think that'd be good for, you know, whether it's Flanders or I don't know if Sagan is ever going to do anything like Liège, Bastogne-Liège or those races. But
I mean, don't you imagine he could?
Yeah, I would think
He did win the Tour of California one year with finishing up the
right. It'd be difficult to put anything past him. So.
Yeah, that's impressive. So what do you got going on for the rest of the season? The season that's dwindled down. We're done racing.
Yeah.
We've been doing these kind of going after group ride KOMs lately.
Right. It's difficult with you know, it's getting darker earlier, so it's more challenging to get out on the bike after work. So you're trying to maximize that time, try and just get a quick hour in to maintain fitness for the weekend group rides. It's one of the things I've definitely kind of pondered this year is what am I going to do to stay fit between now and I guess January is when we're going to start racing again. Do you take a month off? Do you take a couple weeks off? If you take that time off, are you leading yourself into starting the season on the back foot next year? So I've just been trying to maintain fitness by getting out when I can and on the weekends just trying to stay fit and competitive on the local group ride scene.
I definitely didn't feel like I was burned out on racing this year. in writing because I just didn't do a lot of it.
Yeah.
So I've always done that too. I've taken time off. You're done. And you're like, oh, you've been, you know, weight and all these things you've been working on. And then I just like overdo it. We usually about the next month, my wife and I have taken like a little vacation, you know, Hawaii or Vegas or something. And I just eat like a pig.
Right.
And putting on the weight. And then you come back and it's just such a struggle. I'm going to try to not do that this year. And one thing to help my fitness as well, as I see on Training Peaks, is I think I've mentioned this to you before, I'm going to really bring my FTP down.
Yeah, good.
Which will raise my CTL up on my Training Peaks, right. And it'll look like I'm much fitter.
Yeah, I think
that's got to be.
That's like a 10% gain right there, just on, you know, you can roll up to the line and day one of the race season say, hey guys, my CTL is at 110. Yeah. Let's go.
Totally.
And people are going to be terrified. And they're just going to let you do whatever you want to them.
Well, probably not that. But,
okay.
But
I can dream.
I'll feel confident in lying to myself.
I think one of the things that's nice about whether you're using, you know, regardless of whatever performance tracker you're using, there's many of them out there, you know, watching that fitness line drop is always dreadful, whether it's CTL or Strava's interpretation of that. So it's always a nice reminder to get out on your bike as you're watching that value trickle down while you're watching your weight go up. And it's like, okay, those should be going in the opposite direction. So
yeah,
it's nice to have those at your fingertips to kind of stay motivated.
Yeah. And totally. I'm going to plan on taking the time. Now, everything is dependent on, you know, family, sickness, you know, your health,
right,
and the weather. I mean, if we have a winter that was like last winter or the one before, you know, the one before we're in a drought, which, yeah, you know, sucks for the state of California, but really good for bike riding. We had a lot of time outside.
Well, right now it's what, October 25th?
Yes.
We're sitting outside and it's 90 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the trend is favorable for good riding.
But it was cooler this weekend.
That's true. Yeah, this is an unusual little blip, but
yeah, it comes and goes. But and I can take the cold and all that. But you start to have, you know, days where it's sideways rain.
Right.
Well, you're going to be on the trainer, and then how much can you handle?
Yeah.
And then, you know, what are you going to do for that? So
I think in those scenarios, it's just fitness maintenance. Try to lose as little as you can. But yeah, I think my goal this year is to not ride in the rain more than twice. If I can do that, I'll be happy. I just don't really have any desire to ride in the rain right now.
I'm not a real big fan of riding on the trainer either. And I know you did the Zwift and all that. Yeah. I actually did a trainer ride. I think it was last week. It just darkness, some other things. I just wanted to hang out at the house. So I went and did it, and it wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
It still makes me want to like put a gun to my head.
Yeah, it's tough. But once you kind of get into the rhythm and used to it, it's not too bad. My biggest challenge right now is I can't find my headlight. So I'm trying to keep my rides to within the allowable time, usually about an hour. So if I can find my headlight, I'll probably extend that to an hour and a half.
What headlight do you use?
I use a Knight Rider Lumina 700.
Okay.
And it on full blasts lasts about an hour and a half, which is more than enough, I think, for a weeknight ride.
Yeah.
So
I use a Light in Motion, and it actually is, it's one I got specifically because I have a, where my Garmin hooks on, there's a little, I'm trying to remember the and I think it's, maybe it's K-Edge, and it's got a hook there for like a GoPro mount.
Yeah.
But the light has the same hook, so I just pop it on and off real easy. You don't have to do any kind of extra.
I have the same for mine, my Knight Rider. It's like an aftermarket adapter that you can just have on there, and then it's not stuck on your handlebars and getting hung up in cables or anything.
Yeah, so it's a nice pretty slick, and I do like it. How about cross-training? Do you work on any of that?
Core strength, some stretching, maybe. I think that's one of those things.
Reaching for the donuts.
Yeah, that's a good
gluten free,
good curling motion. But every year, I've told myself, okay, this off season, we'll work on flexibility and core strength, and I usually put that off until January, and then it's too late. So I'm going to try and stay on that this year. But so far, I think in the past 2 months, I've stretched once.
That's horrible, and I'm on the same boat, and then. Depends how my year, like in the winter, okay, that's when I'm working on core. And I even bought, heaven forbid, I bought Tom Danielson's core workout book. But I did the worst. This is a book where you really need, it's all about pictures about how to do this certain kind of workouts.
Yeah.
So I bought bought the Kindle version.
Oh, okay.
Which is horrible because I'm trying to on my phone or see how to flip through there. And what you really want to do is like have a book you can flip through to see these poses and whatever else.
Does he have any other tips in there as to kind of how to waffle on things, or is it really focused on?
Yeah, how to sway your moral compass. He's got a few of those those aspects. He also talks about how not to, right after the needle's gone in, you don't want to, it's tender on the one side. maybe not. So we have the data-driven athlete. We have an open ride that Nate Dunn works on. And I know he talked about transitioning that to a little bit more intense. We've kind of had it pretty mellow. And do you know when the next one is happening? I'm going to have to post this in later.
I think it's this weekend, but I'd have to confirm. You could go to datadrivenathlete.com to check. He keeps the dates pretty current. So if he's got to kill a day off, he's good at taking it off. But I know he's looking at extending the route. I'm not sure what that includes yet. But right now it's a 55-mile ride. Includes kind of a 20-mile casual ride to the base of a 7-minute climb that most folks hit at full gas and then get to the top, recover, and 20 miles back at another casual pace.
That's a Baxter, and you've done well on that lately.
Others have done better. Yeah, it's definitely been the target climb for this off season. So it's been a good one to kind of measure your performance improvements.
And that's been kind of interesting because we do such a mellow ride all the way out there that you don't really warm up. Like my heart rate didn't go, and all of a sudden we're like jacked into this thing, and halfway up you're like screaming for help.
Yeah, you think after riding 20 miles that your muscles would be loosened and ready, but they're not.
No, not at all. Okay, so check the website for that. Lastly, we have the Amgen Tour of California. Today's the 25th. The announcement is, I guess, tomorrow. So maybe before this goes to production, I'll be able to get out there and do a little info, maybe do some interviews. I don't know if I'm going to show up for any race announcements. There's some word that it may be right here in our local area.
Yeah, I've heard that there may be some stage presence in Folsom. So in the past, we've had 2 time trials here. This tour frequently passes through here, whether it's the backside of Folsom, in between Folsom and El Dorado Hills, or right through Sutter Street. So it's definitely been prominently featured in a lot of past tour, so it'd be great to have them do a time trial or start and finish a stage here as well.
So what's your suspicion? What do you think it's going to be for here?
I would think time trial. It's been a consistent one that they've used twice now. It's, from what I understand, it's been pretty well run and pretty well organized.
We went heckled out there a few years ago.
Yeah. So I think that would make sense. It's always interesting to have the same. I like to see the same time trial happen again because it's always interesting to kind of use it as a measuring stick to see how performances have changed.
Yeah.
So I would think time trial, but you never know.
My concern with having any race presence here in Folsom is that the KOMs that I do have tend to be clipped out. I went and looked. I rode out into the foothills this last weekend, and I did a climb that I've always liked to do. It's Salmon Falls, and there's this where the river comes down. There's a bridge, and you go up to this big rhino that happens to be up there. It looks kind of funny. I had a pretty good time up there and then I looked at the results, and the KOM had dropped by like 2 minutes or so. And I'm looking, and it's Alexi Vermeulen and Bennett. They're like 1-2 now, and I'm like, okay, these efforts are coming into our territory, which is perfectly fine. And it's just interesting to see, I'm sure they just kind of chilled out and rode up it.
Right. It was a casual conversational pace for
them. Yeah. And for me,
watts the whole way.
Yeah. So you have that, I'd like to see them maybe hit Beatty. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. They've, a few guys have put in a decent effort on Baxter. If you look at the top 5, I think 3 or 4 of them are, Euro Tour pros.
Yeah, that's true. Lawrence Ten Dam or something like that was one.
He's one of them, but there were a couple other guys that jumped ahead of him. I think Tom Skunes has a decent time up there.
He's been out here lately?
I think this was last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
post-concussion maybe.
Anything else in the world of cycling or anything? Oh, I did see this one thing, and I'll have to leave a link to it as well. There was – I found this – 2 things. This – website Bicycle Retailer. I don't know if you've ever been there.
No, I have not.
It's kind of the world of cycling news, like reporting on bike shops and then journalists and some other things like that. So they talked about Kaylee Fretz, who had been the editing manager at Velo News, is going to Cycling Tips.
Okay.
Which was interesting. It was good deal for him. I noticed he had been off their podcast, so he's going to be doing a lot of stuff with cycling tips. And Neil Rogers had written a thing about his skills and this. He also mentioned, as part of being a journalist, he was a really good bike rider. Hmm. I didn't know if that was necessary, but maybe that takes other journalists down a notch.
Maybe.
But then they also had an article about Idaho stops.
Oh.
Kind of be on the roll through. And sure. The Idaho's had this for a while. And it was a decent article about all this, but they had some pros and cons. And one thing they just randomly threw in there was the con would be higher levels of racial profiling.
Oh, okay.
I had not thought that was an issue with...
Not with the Idaho stop. Interesting.
Yeah, Idaho. But in general, I couldn't... I don't even know how that works its way into the conversation, but someone threw that in there. So if anybody wants to throw us a line, kind of give us an idea of how you would be racially profiled by running a stop sign, rolling through casually, I would like to know.
Yeah. Interesting. Another item, in no way consistent with that.
There's not much that is.
The Sagans had a child today.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Boy, so, girl.
Boy, I think. Named okay. Marlon. I assume that's a boy's name.
Could be.
Anyway, I'd be curious to see how that will affect both his off-season training and his race schedule next year. So I don't know if that's going to lead to a reduced schedule or if he's just going to keep on doing what he's been doing. So
Froome has a child and it seems like it hasn't really – maybe it's some people that takes them and they have more of a calming aspect of, I got this family, now I just focus on, take the partying out or whatever they had going. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then you have others, like I remember Tiger Woods winning the U.S. Open and Johnny Miller, the announcer, saying as he's like going down the 17th fairway, he goes, I think the only thing that could derail his career is a family. This is before he had a family. I'm like, well, yes and no.
Right,
and it was
right.
the Grand Slam from Denny's or Waffle House that it might have derailed him.
It was Waffle House, yeah.
Yeah.
But Sagan seems to be different than Froome in the sense that Froome is 100% competition focused, like at all times. So I don't see much derailing him, where Sagan seems like he's always just one casual whim away from walking away from cycling altogether. He just seems to not care. So he's probably going to, race, but I just can see him up and just quitting one day. Just, I've done what I needed to do. I've won 3 world championships in a row and,
yeah,
I'm
he's
out.
Been so successful. Maybe you're saying that if he doesn't have a reason to keep going, he's just going to...
Yeah.
This is your speculation. Children are going to...
I'm just curious to see how, if at all, it affects him.
Yeah. No, I mean, these things change, and then you start to wonder. I mean, look at Talansky. I mean, he's still young, and he's kind of uprooting himself from the world of cycling, which is, on the road and traveling all the time. And sometimes you have kids and other issues in your life, and you kind of go... Is this really important?
Right.
This little bike racing thing I do?
I think if Sagan went to the world of triathlon, that would really shake things up.
How is your... We'll finish here quickly, but how is your triathlon training coming?
Oh, great. I do a lot of cycling. That's about it.
You work on the I work on the transition every day.
I do that as well. No, I did do some running, and I kind of developed a nagging hamstring injury. And from everything I've read and... through self-diagnosis, the best cure has been rest. So that's kind of what I've been focused on. And I don't want to overdo that just for, the interest of not being in constant pain. So I've just been riding the bike and doing some swimming, but really nothing too focused.
So your jump into triathlon, and you did one or two?
I've done one.
One did
one. It was
one.
A sprint.
Okay. Well, regardless, I'm going to take this as some sort of an expert here. So your experience with that going from you hadn't even been golfing lately, right?
Right.
You're not even walking the course. I mean, you're just on the bike only.
Right.
And I think you get wheeled around in a stretcher everywhere else you go because you don't want to walk, right?
Very delicate.
So how was it just going to running and swimming before you did your triathlon from only cycling? And I'm thinking in the realm of Talansky getting thrown into this whole triathlete situation. I mean, I'm worried about injuries for him.
Yeah, and I think, so in my situation, it was, it was in July when teammate John Novikoff and I were driving home from Cascade just completely...
Hammered?
Not hammered. That may have been better, but we were just burnt. I had crashed out and broken my bike, and he was not in the spirits either, and it was like, let's just go do a triathlon. And we looked at the calendar and there was one like 2 weeks away. It's like, we'll do that. So I think I bought some running shoes and went running like 3 days in a row and hurt my knee. So I stopped running before the race. And I think swimming, I swam once before the race, and it was the day before, and it was the full distance, and that was a horrible idea. So yeah, just diving right in was not wise at all. The swim was terrible. I think John felt I needed to be rescued at one point. He was concerned for my life. And the run was pretty rough as well. So yeah, that was my experience. But from what I've read and from the interviews I've listened to with Talansky, he's taking a much more conservative approach. So he's probably not going to race for several months. And he's actually hired a pretty solid coach. And he's got a bunch of sponsors that are supporting him so he can focus exclusively on training. So yeah, he's definitely aware of the potential damages. He just had a really good interview on another show, but he's,
you can mention the show,
Trainer Road.
We're fine.
Trainer Road had a good interview with him, and he talked about, you know, easing into the running, easing into the swimming, and kind of being aware of the fact that, you know, his cycling ability is going to take a bit of a hit to account for the increased time he's going to be spending running and swimming, and kind of tapering into it to avoid injury. So he's taking probably a much more realistic approach than just diving in like we did.
Yeah, which is probably sensible. Now, just to put things in perspective, you swam once the day before.
Yep.
Which was awesome. I'm sure you weren't sore at all for your for your triathlon. And then you ran a few times, and then you won your race and qualified for nationals.
Right.
Or they sent you an email about it.
Yeah, no, I won my age group. It was a situation of just, you know, the turnout wasn't huge. I think there may have been like 20 guys in our age group, and it just so happened that I won exclusively from the bike. I mean, I came out of the water probably 12 minutes behind the leaders, and they had only swam for 12 minutes. So it took me twice as long, but I was able to put a lot of time.
Were they riding fixies? Oh, and by the way, fixies is the only thing that's not included in the tour this year.
There might be. I mean, maybe sneak it in on a rest day.
I think that the TTT is a fixie.
It's on the track. That's what they'll do on the velodrome. They have to switch bikes when they get to Roubaix.
Yeah.
I made up a lot of ground on the bike. And the run was just, you know, I think both John and I were so far ahead of everybody else. Once we got off the bike, it was just finish the 5K run and you're golden.
Grapple. So you made up that much time on the run, on the bike then?
Yeah. Yeah.
How long was it?
The bike leg was 16 miles, I think.
Oh, wow.
18 miles.
So did you just like fly past these people? Like they were going the other direction?
Because again, I would say the bottom 10% getting out of the water. So there was a lot of
debris.
Folks that were just casual cyclists.
Gotcha.
That I was in a full TT getup.
Yeah.
I had to maximize every little bit that I could. So TT helmet. I didn't have a disc, but everything else was full on. And yeah, both John and I were passing people left and right. And it was nice to get through the shrapnel and then just have open road and be able to just hammer away.
That's quickly here, you had mentioned, and then we could tie this thing up in a nice little bow. You had mentioned Trainer Road podcast. Have you used the Trainer, and what do you know about Trainer Road itself? It's not much.
I don't know a lot. I know that they've got interactive workouts that can tie into your trainer, and if you've got a smart interactive trainer, it'll basically control the resistance for you based on watts and based on time duration, and you basically just get on the bike and blindly pedal and you get your workout in. They also have some type of fitness tracker as well, similar to like CTL or Strava's equivalent. But I don't know if it's stuff that you can download or if it's web only or
I had
what.
Checked into them quite a while ago, and it almost seemed like to me they were kind of going towards the direction that Zwift ended up getting there much quicker. Like
sure.
They had this kind of idea and they hadn't really developed it all, and all of a sudden Zwift comes in and they have this boom, and it's maybe they got, because all of a sudden Trainer Road, I don't know, maybe they're still up and around.
Yeah, maybe they are. I never really took Trainer Road to have the social aspect that Zwift does.
Yeah.
And I think Zwift hit out of the park with that by being on top of it quick and releasing that. And they came in after the fact with, oh, you can also upload a workout from Training Peaks or something and do that in the background if you want. So they were definitely social first and structure second.
So did you see, I read this review on Cycling Tips website, I think you know what I'm going to say.
Is it the Air Hub?
Yeah, the Air Hub. So this thing, it's a front wheel resistant wheel that basically is like riding with your front brake on, but it, I guess it can varies and you can control it with an app, but I don't know how you're controlling your app as you're riding. It's like, what, almost $2,000 for
wow,
this thing?
Really?
$1,500 Okay. There was a full lengthy, it's for outside, it's an outside trainer.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
I,
and the trainer indoor is bad. When I'm outside, you know what I do? I go up hills.
No. That's absurd. Or you know what I do if I don't have hills? I just go a little harder.
Yeah. So it seems weird to me to spend, $1,500 to $2,000 on a front, on a, basically a front rubbing brake.
Yeah, I don't understand. I didn't read the article. I saw the picture and
laughed.
Was amused and moved on.
So go to Cycling Tips, take a look at it. If you want to give us your feedback and maybe your own review, do so.
Yeah,
you can find us anywhere.
If there's somebody that has one out there, it'd be great to hear your feedback.
Yeah, I might have to look at it. Anyway, you can find us on all kinds of applications. iTunes, Stitcher, Podbeam, Google Play, Overcast.fm. I think we're in TuneIn Radio. Also look for us on Facebook at Between Two Wheels. And Kurt is...
He was chiming in via Facebook Live just now.
Was he? I was going to do Facebook Live. We didn't do it. Get us on Facebook, and then we'll actually do that maybe next time.
Right.
And you can see us, and we'll wear nice dressed shirts for this occasion.
I just thought like a team hat
would be
appropriate.
Yeah, that can work. Anything else? You want to share anything with us? Maybe how to find you online or to...
I'm not visible online, except for Strava, but that's irrelevant.
That's probably best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come out to the data-driven athlete ride. It's a fun ride. I mean, it's a fun ride, and it's great to just kind of have that, as much as, we talked about hitting Baxter with no intensity in the legs going into it, it's just kind of a nice change of pace to be able to go out and just have a casual ride and not want to attack each other over and over and over. And but at the same time, you do get the opportunity to smash your head in if you want to hit Baxter as hard as you can.
That's so true. I miss the interaction of riding with just enjoyment sometimes because I'm so short focused on time. So I, do these quick hits and then you do a race ride or you do a race and you just don't really have time to just sit and talk to people.
Right.
So it's enjoying. 8:30 on Sundays at Coffee Republic in Folsom. Check it out on datadrivenathlete.com. And Chris, I appreciate you joining me again today.
Yeah, happy to do it.
Kurt, thanks for joining. Kurt's not here. So.
He joined remotely. He gave some input.
What did he say? He didn't.
Sent like a inappropriate sketch of stuff. It's not for sharing.
The poop emoji. That's usually what he sends to me.
Right.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. And thank you. And we'll see you next time.
Cheers.